Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week. That's Monday through Thursday if you happen to be stateside, and Tuesday through Friday if you happen to be in New Zealand, because we are the first in the world to see the sun. We see the world in the future while everybody else is living in the frickin' past. And my very special guests joining me tonight are Ralph Fusatola and his wonderful cohort and mistress of the macabre, Rima Dr. Rima Lebeau. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Well, thank you so much. If I am the mistress of the macabre, you are the wizard of the weird.
That's right.
It is a weird world indeed that we have to be wizards in, isn't it?
Yes, but you'll be surprised the amount of stuff that we can fit up our sleeves. Now, I was going to read out a couple of things, because the reason for calling you together on this show today is because of an article released in the New Zealand Herald this morning, the headline of which is "Leading Doctor Calls for No Jab, No Pay." Now, this quote-unquote leading doctor is also in another article in the New Zealand Herald recently. He is apparently number two on the list of the 100 most trusted New Zealanders. And I was reading through this article, and I'm going to, if I may, I'm just going to preface the show for this, and I will also restate this this exact process when we begin the second hour as well, because it bears repeating. Now, I read this article, and I thought to myself, well, how can you tell if this article is a propaganda piece for Big Pharma? And so I started using my my Mac search key, which locates keywords on web pages, and I determined that the word children is mentioned 25 times. The word vulnerable is mentioned 6 times. The word science appears 0 times. The word evidence appears 0 times. The word studies appears 0 times. Plus, at the end of the article, it says if you want more information, you're supposed to talk to either your pro-vaccination doctor or practice nurse, or failing that, call the pro-vaccination government department. So, did you know that your doctor can lose their license if they try to force you to take a medication without your informed consent? Now, just remember that we're talking about the no jab, no pay thing that came out of Australia, which means that people who are on a benefit of some kind, a government a handout, will not be able to get any money if they don't vaccinate their children. So it's basically taking away their consent. And the article also estimates that about $15,000 to $16,000 is what not vaccinating your child will cost you. To my mind, that says that the rich have a getaway free card and the poor have a jab in your arm card, which will be stamped much like a concentration camp. And what this doctor's doing is violating the oath he took to become a doctor. Now, I wonder how much money he gets paid in commission from Big Pharma to sell their poisons to unsuspecting victims who believe everything he says. Now,
vaccine... Is he a pediatrician?
No, he's a GP, general practitioner. But I've seen that vaccine-pushing doctors in particular, they found a way to make being a douche and being irresponsible a part of their fiduciary responsibility, which I find quite funny. And then when you
does that make it their fiduciary responsibility?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, they think it's their responsibility to be a douche, but I think that's the same thing. Anyway,
what they're really doing, of course, is violating the Nuremberg Code, for which a number of Nazi doctors were hung.
Yeah, ironically, and they're violating this code because they're just following orders, which is another part of the code.
Right.
You know, and when you're arguing with people online about this, I'm sick of people asking to see all the evidence that led to my conclusions, which took me like 6+ years to wrap my head around. I'm like, bro, if you want to know the truth, you have to be determined. It won't be served up on a silver platter for some lazy, half-witted, half-assed people who rely on authority to tell them what to think or what to believe. Now, I mean, a pro-vaxxer was arguing with me, and he asked, oh, do you even know what a peer-reviewed means? And I replied, yes, I do know what peer-reviewed means. In point of fact, what peer-reviewed means is that the Rockefeller Foundation, who provide all the drugs made out of crude oil waste products, sent a man named Flexner around the US medical schools once upon a time in the 1800s. Flexner ordered all medical schools that didn't meet his, quote, standards, i.e. anything that is not drug-based medicine, would be closed. Herbology, reflexology, naturopathy, homeopathy, chiropractic, but basically closed the schools teaching any medical practice that taught anything other than a pill for every ill. And ever since then, the peer review is a way of keeping any inconvenient research from being verified. For example, everyone thinks that the level 6 biotoxin hydrofluorosilicic acid, aka fluoride, is safe and effective, right? Well, because there are 5,000 peer-reviewed studies on the effects of fluoride on teeth to prove it. But there are zero peer-reviewed studies of fluorides on the effect of the brain, the liver, the bones, the immune system, reproductive organs, the environment, skin, eyes, digestion, or anything that is affected by the ingestion of fluoride. Now, there have been many, many studies proving that it is dangerous, but of course, they're not peer-reviewed. Just imagine.
So are you telling me, Vinny, that we have a situation where all the science being offered by the drug pushers is actually tainted crony science without any possible claim for objectivity and disinterest?
I've got a word.
They're allowed to do that, apparently.
We have,
for example, in the United States, our chief ethicist and a court clown, a gentleman by the name of Paul Offit, PhD, who is brought up.
Paul Offit, MD.
Oh, he is an MD. Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry. He's a person who personally profits from vaccine patents, and he also sits on the committee that approves the vaccines, the CDC committee. And it's okay to do that as long as you say, oh, I'm making a profit on this, you can vote in favor of your profit. Oh, how nice.
Well, that's called marketing, right? All of the things you said are true, but it's called marketing. All right, so here's the point. Just imagine for one moment that you don't know everything. Imagine for a moment that everything you think you know is a lie. And then imagine for a moment that all the crazy people are the sane ones and that you're the madman. Imagine for a moment that you're so crazy that you don't know how crazy you are. Then imagine for a moment that it didn't happen by accident, but it is the result of a deliberate plan by groups of madmen that are far more insane than you could ever possibly imagine.
Yep.
That sounds like reality. I don't see the imagination there. The terrifying thing is how hard it is for most people to comprehend that there's nothing imaginary about what you've said. And I think you've said it brilliantly, by the way. We are dealing with intentional distortion of reality for personal advancement of many kinds. And that takes us out of the realm of insanity and into the realm of evil, because the amount of harm that is being perpetrated is truly mind-numbing, truly incomprehensible. We're talking about mandates and universalities of harm that are intentional, that are well understood, and that are pathways to death and destruction that and profit while the death and destruction is taking place. Now, those are not the kinds of things that we learn in medical school or college or high school or elementary school. We learn the exact opposite. But when we come into the science, which is not mentioned in that article, Vinny, when we come into the studies that actually do exist showing the harm that we're talking about, then we suddenly come into the realm of the dismissible, the unknowledgeable, and we are dismissed because we are telling, as was famously said, an inconvenient truth. But it's our responsibility to tell that inconvenient truth and tell it over and over again. Because, you know, I have to disagree with you on one thing, Vinny. The science actually does exist. The science is there. What is not there is the will for the religiously observant vaccinologists to see the science. But it's there for everybody to see.
Please let me explain. You actually do agree with me, because I agree that the science exists. I'm just saying that the science that exists doesn't get peer-reviewed, because the peer-review process is specifically to cover up inconvenient science.
Well, the science does exist. It exists peer-reviewed
really?
In places like toxicology journals. It exists in environmental science journals. It exists. It's out there. It's just hard to find in medical journals, because that is so inconvenient. But it's there. And I just wrote a paper, which I presented in India by invitation at the first All India Medical Education Congress. And I presented a paper dealing with this, which is on our website. I'll give you the reference if you like. And that paper has a huge number of peer-reviewed scientific references from reputable journals showing the harm. It's just that the harm is then denied and ignored by the dishonest hawkers who have so much to gain from denying and ignoring.
And maybe so much to lose by admitting that they were wrong. Their credibility, for example, their profit margins, perhaps.
Exactly.
So take a look at, here's the link to take a look at Dr. Rima's paper, not just the paper, but the slide presentation that the paper refers to, and there's also a video there of Dr. Rima presenting it. You go to one of our tiny URLs, that's tinyurl.com/ Dr. Rima India paper, all rolled on as one word. That's DRRIMA, Dr. Rima India paper, and you'll be able to get at that very important information. Very important information. So,
frankly, if you look at that information, I don't see how anybody could ever vaccinate anybody again if they're an honest person.
Well, I think the brain just tells you, no, don't do it, don't do it. And this, I think, is really quite a natural thing. Like, for example, if you've ever fallen over and scraped your knee, you're very unwilling to swing on a swing without holding on to the swing very tightly, you know? And you won't experiment again about that. So that's meant to keep you safe. But what's problematic now is that we're being told things that we haven't learned firsthand. We haven't actually fallen over onto a vaccination needle and accrued some kind of disease to then teach us, boom, that's a bad thing, I'm not doing that again. In most cases, it's purely academic.
Well, not for the families of the vaccine injured, who typically have their very clear knowledge of what happened to their child or their loved one ripped from them by deniers and liars who say, no, it couldn't possibly be the vaccine. Oh, no, you're wrong, mother. No, the child was going to become autistic on Wednesday of last week anyway. It has nothing to do with the vaccine.
The father shook the child. The father did the damage, not the medical system.
Think about the scumbaggery here. I mean, like what level of scumbaggery that you need to be at? Like, if scumbaggery is a level of 1 to 10, 1 meaning you'll steal candy from a baby, 10 meaning you will actually torture and eat that baby, what kind of scumbaggery level do you need to be at in order to think, you know what, we're going to make some money? And if a few children die, or their parents go to jail, or they get horribly debilitated for the rest of their effing life, however long or short it might be, then that's worth it, you know?
Let's go a step further, Vinny, and we have an MIT professor telling us, for example, that by 2020, 50% of all live births in the United States will be of autistic children. You're no longer talking about a handful of injuries. Now you're talking about literally half the next generation being the perfect Delta worker drone.
Now that's really horrible.
It's no longer just a little expense that society needs to bear so that the plutocrats can pile up gold in their vaults. It's now the survival of the species as human. That is, it's the destruction of our genome that's happening, and the vaccines are just part of it. They're only one of the things that's coming. There is this perfect storm coming at us, as General Burt says, of all of these technologies that add up to the destruction of the genome. And Dr. Rima, didn't you identify in the past few days the idea that there are three specific delivery systems being used
deliver? And before I talk about
this, is a unique, by the way, folks. This is an exclusive here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Go ahead, Dr. Rima.
Before I identify this very interesting three-part genomicidal delivery system that we're laboring under the damage of, I wanted to say that it is very, very clear, if you look at the non-interested science, that there is literally no reason to vaccinate anyone if you wish to promote health. And I also wanted to say that 2 days ago, Microsoft joined Vodafone, SAP, Goldman Sachs, and several of the other most powerful companies in the world and largest companies in the world in saying that they would seek out autistic workers because autistic workers are so desirable. We did a webinar, which was interfered with in very, very specific ways, on September 13th, 2014, I believe, which was about creating Delta workers, as Aldous Huxley called them. And we called it autism, an inside job. It was on September 11th. Very specifically for that purpose. We are talking about a level of scumbaggery, Vinny. If it's 1 to 10 on the ordinary scale, this is 76,000. Now, in terms of the delivery systems.
And I think she's being conservative, folks.
I think so. Fluoride is incredibly toxic, as you said quite correctly and quite articulately. Aluminum is an incredibly toxic metal, and mercury is an incredibly toxic metal. And by the way, the science is very clear on all three of those things in peer-reviewed journals. Now, we get aluminum from chemtrails. We get aluminum from vaccines. We can avoid aluminum if we don't drink from aluminum cans, if we don't eat from aluminum vessel, eat food from that's been cooked in aluminum vessels, and if we don't use aluminum foil and so on. But if it's injected into us, we can't avoid it. If mercury is injected into us, we can't avoid it. If aluminum is being sprayed down on us by chemtrails, we can't avoid it. And if fluoride is being put into our water and into our, therefore, into our food and into everything in the environment that is impacted by water, we can't avoid it. If it's even put into vaccines, which it is in some, if it's in psychoactive drugs, and some psychoactive drugs are 50% fluoride by weight, which is why they produce apathy. So when you put these to any two of these together, they are super additively toxic, which means aluminum and mercury are about 10,000 times more toxic each when they're present together than they would be alone. Mercury and fluoride are at least 1,000 times more toxic together than they are separately. So now we have chemtrails for aluminum, vaccinations for aluminum and mercury, and water, fluoride. And you put them together, a triple delivery system for genomic disaster. And make no mistake, the assaulted target is the human genome, the genetic material. It's not the individual kid who becomes autistic, although that's very helpful in terms of the chemicals that the child will be given for the rest of its life. But the real target is the human genome. Are we intended to remain human? It's not clear. Are we intended to remain alive? That's very clear. The answer to that one is no.
It's kind of like the Star Trek Alive. You know, it's life, Jim, but not as we know it. And otherwise, you know, you'll never really truly be alive again. There won't actually be an awake, non-brain-damaged, morally backboned human being left. They'll all be wiped out, you know, whether by hook or by crook.
That's absolutely, well, by crook. Lots of crooks. That's absolutely true. It's life, Jim, but not as we know it. And that's what we're supposed to become if we're allowed to survive. Remember, Agenda 21 says that most of us are not allowed to remain alive. We need to reduce the planet for the good of the planet to 10% of its current population for the good of the planet. And that's all part of this same scumbaggery. Could you come up with a new word? Because scumbaggery is good for when people are lying, you know, when they're politicians. But this is a whole different level of something or other. It's orders of magnitude beyond,
let's just say,
classic scumbaggery.
That the English language has more words combined within it, hundreds of thousands, I think, than virtually any other language combined to man. And a word does not exist for scumbaggery of this magnitude.
Yes.
You know, and contrary to popular opinion, scumbaggery is actually a very serious charge. You know, it's quite a bad thing.
Even genocide is pale by comparison.
Well, I think it's because there's no precedent. There's nothing of this magnitude that has ever been seen or documented in even ancient history. There's nothing by comparison to this, rather than a slow great flood.
You're absolutely correct. We're talking about something magnitude.
Something that is biblical. That is the word.
You know, the world does have a sort of an example of it. Think of what happened in the Soviet Union towards the end, when it became obvious that Russian males, one would think Russian males would be the chief beneficiaries of the system, but Russian males were living shorter and shorter lives, even taking into account the insanity of Stalin and Lenin and massacring all those people. Even taking that into account, Russian males were living shorter and shorter lives.
Yeah, but this
until the system itself began to collapse around their ears, literally.
This would be the equivalent of Russian males, Russian females, Russian children, mm-hmm. Russian everybody being purged.
Well, this essentially is a depopulation agenda. The question is it an unconscious depopulation agenda, or is it an intentional genocidal agenda?
I think it's semantics. It doesn't matter. The point is, there's a genocide going on. Who started it? Who, you know? It's kind of like, I don't care who started it. I'll finish it.
Let's think about this for a second. Let's put our heads into a different space. What will it be like in 10, 15, 20 years if the other side gets what it wants? Let's assume for a minute that we fail to push back and we fail to stop them. Although I want to point out, we are stopping them. In the United States, there were 27 state legislators that received bills to restrict people's rights to avoid vaccination. And in the first three or four of those that have come anywhere near votes, we've defeated them. And it looks as though in California, it may be getting close to being stopped also. On the other side of the planet, you know, I understand that although in Australia, the prime minister, who, of course, would not allow his daughters to receive Gardasil, wants to force all the poor kids to get all the vaccines. But in New Zealand, didn't the newspaper articles just say in the past day or so that the government is not prepared to start forcing people to take vaccines?
our Prime Minister, John Key, former Federal Reserve Banker, says, no, I don't want to deprive people of their rights to medical choices.
That's a wonderful.
That's pretty amazing. How did that happen?
So we're winning. So notice we are winning in most of the world.
But then again, everything else that he's ever said, and I'm not, I might be oversimplifying it, but then again, probably not. Everything he's ever said, he's changed his mind on, like, the next day, or been proven to be lying about 6 months later or something like that. It depends whether he wants to admit that he's lying or whatever, but he just says, I changed my mind. I wasn't lying.
You got to use his words to isolate the other side.
Well, usually what happens is he'll say one thing that I go, yeah, that seems regular, and then the next day or so he gets visited by some executive, or he goes to some other country, and then he comes back and he's saying something completely different.
You know, it's
like the friggin' Manchurian candidate. Right, so, I'm sure they have some kind of room inset into the wall where they inject stuff into his brain with, like, little crawly spidey creatures.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, got it. So let's assume for a minute that we fail to push back hard enough, and all around the world, all the vaccines become mandatory for all people. We're all, adults and children alike, end up getting these 70 or 200 vaccines. What would the world of 2025, 10 years from now, what will it look like?
Empty.
It'll look like Idiocracy, I think. There'll be garbage piles everywhere. There'll be starving people, poverty like never before seen. Infrastructure will be collapsing. There'll be mass starvation, mass death, wars, genocide. And basically anything that you want to sustain yourself with, whether that be food or water, is either contaminated or provided exclusively by a corporation that has purposely contaminated it.
Right.
Yes, that's absolutely accurate.
So it's going to be not that bad, you know.
So you think that there will not be enough people with brains left to maintain the infrastructure?
Yeah. I mean, basically, my geography teacher, I asked him one time, how do you predict the weather without having any devices or anything? He says, well, if you just take the weather yesterday and apply it to today, most of the time you'll be correct. And I think that's the methodology I've been using for quite a long time. What's tomorrow going to be like? Well, it's going to be like today, except worse.
Well, but as Ralph said, we are, in fact, making significant headway in a lot of places. And that's not a small thing at all. We need to ask what's making it so that we're successful where we are, and then we need to do much, much more of it.
I think you're absolutely correct, and I don't know, as a radio show host, I try to interview a lot of people who have a lot of interesting and very important things to say, as well as solutions to these problems which we're discussing. On the other hand, in order to even be interested in hearing those solutions, I have to be very, very concerned about the problems and what dangers are actually held therein. In so doing, my feeling, just in general, is that everything's going to be bad, we're going to lose, and we're going to be screwed. However, I have a moral obligation and no choice whatsoever in the process. I have to keep trying everything that I can as a douchebag radio show host to do something to stop it.
Well, I think we do have to try to stop it, and I think we have to succeed to stop it. That's the point. We really don't have a choice. As Ralph's excellent question points out, the alternatives to winning these battles is so unthinkable, are so unthinkable and so vile that we must win. We must mobilize, and we must communicate and empower people in large numbers, because the consequences of doing anything different are beyond human comprehension in horribleness.
Now, people say that we're fear-mongering, and I'm just like, no, we're not. We're informing. Do you know why people are afraid of something? Because they're not informed about it. They don't know enough about it. We are destroying fear by telling them what they should actually really be concerned about, pointing them in areas of research so they can make their own decisions. Only then, once you have informed people, attacking the real problems based upon sound evidence, will we have any broad brush successes that are actually likely to bring this whole juggernaut to a halt? Right now, I think what's been happening for the last decade is we've become very, very adept at slowing down their agendas. All the many various agendas that are currently going in place simultaneously along with one another, there is always somebody exposing it, and there are always people listening to that person. There are always more people becoming activated by that person and start exposing things all on their own. You can't stop humanity. It has never been able to be completely subjugated forever, and I believe that we've been subjugated through all of these various machinations for so long that it's about time that we spring back.
Well, we certainly agree with you. The one thing that's unique here is the genetic assault. All of these previous times when we've been subjugated, and places and dictatorships and horror events when we've been subjugated, the essence of humanity, and I'm talking about the physiological essence as well as the psychological, social, and spiritual essence of humanity, which includes the capacity to love, which is an essential piece of our human survival, that has not been changed. If you starve somebody to death, you'd certainly change their physiology, but you haven't altered their genome so that they are no longer human, although they may behave in ways that are not humane. This is different, and that's what makes this particularly dangerous and horrifying, because the other side is playing for keeps in a way that we have never contended with before. Never.
And I think the main point to take away from all this is sometimes you really do have to consider yourself to be a bit more humble, right? Again, reiterating, you don't know what you don't know. There's all sorts of stuff going on. The world's a very big, very complex place. To even keep up with a couple of people's lives is excruciating. That's why people only really have two or three good friends, generally speaking. Very, very close friends. That's because that's our social circle, really. It's quite small like that. Meant to be with the family and this kind of thing, but now you're in cities of millions of people and everybody becomes anonymous. They don't even realize what it is to be an individual anymore. To be recognized when they walk down the street. They don't know what that feels like. And I think maybe we've come together and become so tightly packed, and yet we've never felt ever more alone than we do now at this very point in history.
That's absolutely true. And so we reach out for synthetic community and synthetic intimacy, and we text people the pictures of what we just had for, or what we're about to have for lunch, what was just brought to our table, and that passes for community, which is very sad. But the fact is that people always reach for community because biologically and socially and psychologically and neurologically, we change and become more human when we're in a community organizational environment. And that's illustrated by a new study that just came out a couple of days ago that is very, very fascinating. It shows that our immune system is enhanced when we see pictures, or actually the real thing, when we see pictures of people who have bacterial or viral diseases. Our immune system responds to our community members, even when it's only a photograph and there is therefore no possibility of responding to the actual contagion. So we need to actually see people who are sick in order to stay healthy. That's what happens in a community, in a normal community. Some people get sick, other people don't. And we respond at the deepest levels without even knowing that we're doing so. You take away the community, you take away the humanness. Now, You said, what's it going to be like if we don't win? Well, if you take away the humanness, you also take away the community. There's no way that autists who are workers are going to form communities with unions, are going to form social structures that can keep and sustain them except in the most minimal ways. But they'll be much easier to control that way, won't they?
Well, I think also the other element that really needs to be expanded on is why the debates between the pro and the anti-vaccinations go the way they do. And by that I mean go nowhere, right? If you've got somebody who's like crazily pro-vaccination and somebody who's got evidence and what have you and knows what they're talking about and has evidence to back up what they're saying, the other side is too brainwashed to admit that they don't know what they're talking about and will never look at the evidence provided, and even if they do, never do any of their own verification or believe anything that's shown on those paper. You know, it's like, so why bother? It's like mental masturbation, right? So if
now you're talking about the educational system, Vinny. People are trained not to think because they're more easily controlled, and therefore everything in our public education and an awful lot in our private education is really about de-thinkification.
And
making people useful as technicians, but not useful as thinkers.
So if you're engaged in a debate with one of these non-thinkers, just remember that in triage on the battlefield, when you've got people blown apart and everything, certain people are too far gone and you merely waste resources trying to help them when they're going to die anyway. Some people you cannot help, just say one thing because it's your moral obligation to at least give them a warning, at least give them a little bit of information. But if they persist and persist and use all these diversionary tactics and name calling and everything, you've got better places to be. You've got people you can spend your time on that are more worth it.
You know, the song that you were playing at the beginning of the show, Vinny, said, I feel like I'm doing this alone. And everybody who is a change agent is going to feel, at least part of the time, like they're doing this alone. That's a normal part of taking the responsibility of being a change agent, and it sucks, but it is normal, and you have to expect that. You and I have talked on this show about losing family and friends to the perception, to being unwilling to give up your own truth and being unwilling to not speak it. So this is another example, but here the rabidness is extraordinary.
It's when what is it I'm trying to say? I think it's like when you lose intellectual control. Have you ever gotten so angry that you lash out aggressively, you say something that's really nasty, or you strike something or destroy something? I mean, I'm a 6 foot guy that didn't have a father for the first like 11 years of his life, pretty much. So I've got a lot of unresolved anger issues. It happens. But what I notice that if that happens, has been happening a lot less lately, it's because my brain's shut off. I'm having an emotional reaction. I'm not thinking. There's some fear, anger, or frustration there instead of clear, calm, logical thoughts in order to arrange the things that are going on.
Now are you ingesting any fluoride?
No.
Right.
Now we come to Lebo's first law of psychodynamics. You know, Vinny, that I am a psychiatrist, and therefore I have a license to speak in psychobabble, which I'm about to do. And I treasure that license because it's always amusing at cocktail parties. Of course, nobody invites me anymore.
Well, should we say it was amusing at cocktail parties? For you only.
Precisely. That could be why they don't invite me. The point that I wanted to make is that there is a reason that what you're saying occurs, and I think you've almost nailed it. That is, in my experience as a psychiatrist, understanding human behavior and motivation, at least to some extent, it occurs to me that anger drives out fear, or at least it is supposed to. We feel weak and vulnerable when we are frightened. We have an illusion of power and protectedness when we are angry. We feel that we expand rather than contract. We feel that we can handle the situation, whatever it might be, because the adrenaline is running, because we have the illusion of power that is supplied to us temporarily by the cognitive and the physiological changes that occur. It is indeed an illusion, and we are always weakened by the anger unless we find a way to use it constructively. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with being angry that somebody is trying to poison you, that somebody is trying to kill you and your family. There is a mobilizing capacity that you can evoke from that anger, and you don't have to be angry. Anger does show up when people are frightened, but you can also have justified, reasonable, rational, and mobilizing anger, and it can be a very potent force for change without being destructive, by the way.
Yeah. They're trying to exterminate me. Oh, stop being upset about it, bro. You're just giving them your energy.
Exactly. Precisely.
Oh, exactly. My God. Talk about cannon fodder in the making. Oh. It's like, I don't know, have you ever seen those new juices or whatever, like this juice comes out one end and sort of like the sludgy pulp comes out the other, you know? One's full of nutrition and it's actually got some beautiful stuff that's going to sustain you and it tastes really good, and the other one's just dry bloody garbage, right? Pretty much. That's the thought process and the difference between somebody who actually thinks for themselves and somebody who obeys anything anybody else says.
Well, who obeys it unquestioningly. There are times when it's not bad to obey something that somebody says. You know, if I'm walking on a street and my husband, Bert, who has only good intentions toward me, says, "Stop!" I'm going to stop because he noticed that there was a car barreling down on me that I didn't notice. So there are times when we give our permission to somebody to interact with us that way.
But such times are temporary.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
People have gone into this permanent, that's what it is. I think it was, what's his name? He's a really good guitarist, I think, and he said something along the lines of TV just keeps shelling out Americans with fear porn all the time. And what's happening now is that everybody's so compressed into a feeling of fear on a constant basis that they have this aura of endless threat. And if you are constantly on edge like that, it's not possible for you to stop and have time to think clearly without worrying about the bills, worrying about the crime and the Russians and the bankers, you know?
Absolutely. And yet, on the other side of that, is the fact that there is constant threat, which is intentionally engineered, but you're not supposed to notice it. You're supposed to notice the pseudo-threats. You're supposed to be afraid of the war on terror, or you're supposed to be afraid of the drugs that the war on drugs is combating. So you're not supposed to notice the real threat, but you are supposed to pay lots of attention to the pseudo-threat.
So you're putting people's attention elsewhere. So let me see if I've got this straight. You've got a global conspiracy that involves nearly every single power structure or authority that anybody could ever be brought up to respect. And those very things that are brought up to protect them, that they're supposed to respect and obey, are in fact the ones killing them. And they have sort of set about a global propaganda and brainwashing campaign to instill in people the thought that anybody who says anything to their agenda, which is killing them, is actually the one that is the threat. I.e.
Yes.
Anybody who's talking about anything different to the official party line. I don't know. I've lost almost all respect for everything that has ever been said in an official capacity to a large degree, because so much of my life has been spent unlearning what I have believed that the authorities have been telling me.
What about you, Ralph? Have you been traumatized into unlearning?
That's very interesting. Of course, we've all been at this game for many years. I started life, conscious of politics in 1964. So I think that we all learn lessons through life, and that every generation has to learn anew not to trust its politicians. I think it's coming. The end game is in sight. When 50% of the children might very in one leading country, the United States, might very well be on the autism spectrum in a few years. Our foundation, Natural Solutions Foundation, the website for which is www.drrima.truthreports.com. That's DRRIMA, truthreports.com. We celebrated our 10th anniversary last year in 2014, and we declared this coming decade, 2015, to be the decade of genetic restoration, not the decade of genetic collapse. And we did that on purpose, because the results of the agenda of the globalist elites' depopulation agenda is literally genetic collapse, the collapse of our species and our civilization, which is what I was suggesting earlier, that we imagine what it might be like if these crazies got their way, because we need to understand what it would be like in order to make sure that we can stop them at every moment, at every turn. Yeah. It isn't just the venality of Paul Offit getting $48 million for the vaccine that he personally voted in favor of foisting on the public. For the first year, right? It's not just that. It's the ultimate result of what he's doing, which really is to take away from us our freedom of choice and prevent us from really understanding.
I mean, it'll be so bad that people will pray for something as bad as The Walking Dead to happen to humanity. You know, it's just like, oh my God, why couldn't the end be zombies? Oh, this would be so much better than all this.
Well, why do you think that people have been given zombies, dead people, as entertainment? You think?
Well, it's shown that every single empire that has collapsed throughout history had a strong worship of death towards its end of its demise.
Indeed. There are lots of things that we can do. And one of them is to focus on life. Indeed, every culture that begins to destroy itself does indeed have a worship of death. I was in a craft show. You know, I live in Santiago, Chile. And on Saturday, one of the counties that makes up the metropolitan region of Santiago had a craft fair. And I like handmade things, so off I went. And there was a booth selling clothing for little children, babies and toddlers and young school children. And they had all kinds of cute little backpacks and headbands for girls and so on. And they had skulls on them. They had death's heads on them in pink and in purple. And I stopped and I looked at this and I thought, my God in heaven, what kind of decadent non-functionality puts skulls on children and calls it decor? Calls it decoration, calls it cute. What are we focusing on? What are we teaching? What is the unconscious message here? And the answer is every culture that is in the process of disintegrating has a strong worship of death toward its end. We decorate our children with their own death. What is this? How many people do you know that are walking around with t-shirts and sneakers and backpacks with skulls on them? Barrettes.
That, by the way, brings us And that brings us to a really interesting blog that Dr. Rima wrote a couple of days ago, actually a couple of weeks ago now. There's a work of art that was created by an artist and paid for by Bill Gates that to us seems to sum up exactly that worship of death in vaccines. And if you go to our website, drrimatruthreports.com, you'll see that image right there or near the top of the page. And you'll know it's the right image. Right, Dr. Rima? Do you want to describe the image?
It's a picture. It's very
beautiful.
In that it's very beautiful, and it combines sensuality, sexuality, and death in an image of death, a very beautiful death, directing Dr. Edward Jenner to vaccinate John Phillips, the child that he eventually killed, as he did his son, by revaccinating and revaccinating and revaccinating them. It is an erotic picture. It is a captivating picture. It is the romance of death and smallpox. And Bill Gates thought this was terrific. Now, interestingly, the artist who created it, who is a very talented woman, did so thinking that she was supporting vaccines and vaccination. And what she's actually supporting is the worship of death through vaccination. I fully recommend that you take a look at the picture. You don't even have to read the article. It's pretty clear what it means. You don't have to work hard to get the meaning out of it. We are being trained to accept our own subjugation and our own demise. That troubles me. I think that's maybe a bad thing. We are being trained to pay to line up to have death injected into us. I think that's maybe a bad thing. And I think that those of us who see it and say, no, that's a bad thing, are deeply troublesome to the system. And that's our job as human beings, to be deeply troublesome to a system that wants us silenced and wants us dead. Why does the system want us dead? So it can be, and I quote, sustainable. How crazy. Did I make this up? Am I crazy enough to make this up? Did Vinny make it up? Is he crazy? Well, maybe Vinny is, but I'm not crazy enough to make this up. The UN made this up. It's called Agenda 21.
And it's called the Global Health Security Initiative.
Yes.
Which is a wonderful bit of Aesopian language. Aesop, of course, was the creator of the myths, allegedly, or at least the chronicler of the myths. And
Aesopian language, the global health strategic.
Let's talk about that particular initiative. It's an organization that has been organized around the UN. It's one of those public-private partnerships. All the usual suspects belong, you know, everybody from the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Gates Foundation, probably the Clinton Foundation, who knows.
The Council on Foreign Relations.
Right, all of those guys. And it's run by these two protégés of the Secretary General of the UN, and they are social scientists who've gotten articles published in peer-reviewed journals, Vinny. They are peer-reviewed, and these articles basically say that the most cost-effective way of dealing with pandemics is to have less vectors and less victims. We are all, of course, vectors and victims. And therefore, the most cost-effective way of dealing with pandemics is to have less people. That is, in order to prevent the pandemics, and I presume it's the deaths in the pandemics that they're concerned about, you have to have death. But, of course, it's not the deaths in the pandemics they're concerned about. It is the cost of the pandemic. It's less expensive for the elite if we all just die instead of become vectors.
Sorry, we're coming to break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 4 days a week for your listening pleasure. My very special guest joining me still in the second hour is Ralph Fusitola and Dr. Rima Labo. Welcome back. Now,
thank you.
Is there anything you were in the middle of explaining something, Dr. Ralph, at the end of the second hour? I want you to rehash that a little bit about that that sort of agenda through the UN and what have you, and then of course I'm going to have to quickly rehash for those of the audience who have just joined us.
We were talking about the Global Health Security Initiative, and we were talking about how it fits into the global elite's depopulation agenda. Spearheaded by, of course, the vaccination madness that seems to be gripping so many nations around the world, where we see, in, for example, 27 American states having bills pending to restrict people's rights to avoid vaccines. Australia's prime minister, who, of course, did not have his three daughters receive the Gardasil vaccine, wanting to force all the poor children in the country to receive every vaccine, or their families will be denied aid. Let them starve if they won't take the shot. So we see this happening in many places around the world, and we wonder, what is global health security, and whose initiative is it? So the GHSI is one of those wonderful public-private partnerships that the United Nations and Benito Mussolini used to love so much. This one consists of all the usual characters, all of the usual foundations, Rockefeller, Gates, probably Clinton, Ford, the usual, and various organizations, Planned Parenthood, and whatever other ones. Dr. Rima has a list of them, I believe. And they are all built around this issue of, how do we stop pandemics? What is the best way to handle it? Well, the two social scientists, proteges of the Secretary General of the UN, who run the organization, have published articles about how to do it in those peer-reviewed journals that we were talking about earlier. And those articles basically say that the most cost-effective way of dealing with pandemics is to have less victims and vectors. That is, the way you avoid people dying in a pandemic is to have less people to begin with. That's the most cost-effective way. It's about culling the herd. It's certainly not about dealing with human beings, but it's about culling the herd in order to make the herd healthier. A smaller herd is a healthier herd, perhaps. That may be the thinking of the global elite, who certainly view the rest of us as chattel and cattle and a herd to be culled.
And not to mention their eugenicists who tried to interbreed their families in the past, who were all born retarded. So what is this, like their vengeance? Ah, we're going to vaccinate everybody to make sure they're all born mentally handicapped too.
Well, it produces one of the perfect important Delta things. Workers. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ralph.
Yeah, it produces the perfect Delta worker. Paul G. King, PhD, one of our favorite refugees from Big Pharma, showed us that the vaccine schedule is being fine-tuned to produce a higher and more functional level of autism. But, go ahead, Doctor. What you were saying.
And what? Well, I was going to say something else, but about that. And this is very, very important. People say, well, it can't be the mercury in the vaccines that's causing autism, because childhood vaccines, with the exception of the flu vaccine, which a child gets twice in the first year and once every year thereafter, if they follow the schedule, with the exception of that vaccine, childhood vaccines no longer have mercury. Ah, yes, they do. The deal is that when children only received 3 or 4 or even 5 vaccines, and those vaccines had mercury, they received, let's say, 75 micrograms total. Now, every vial, and that's a very good name for it, a vial, every vial of vial vaccine is washed with thimerosal and then emptied out before the vaccine material is put
Ralph, I'm sorry, can you mute your microphone, please? We're getting a bit of feedback from your end. Sorry, Dr. Rima, continue.
That means that with a schedule of 65 or even 69 vaccine doses by the age of 5, children get more vaccines, more mercury, significantly more mercury in those supposedly mercury-free vaccines in the aggregate than they got when they were taking mercury-containing vaccines. And they also get aluminum. We talked in the first hour about the fact that aluminum and mercury are super additively more toxic. They're about 1,000 times more toxic together than they are individually. And so you have a super toxic situation where the nervous system is being assaulted again and again and again and again. And in more and more children, the nervous system, the endocrine system, the liver can no longer bear the assault. But that makes them useful, docile workers. And that's what the New World Order has said that it needs. The British government has said that autistic workers are the perfect workers. And corporations, Microsoft just a few days ago, Vodafone, Goldman Sachs, SAP, are actively competing to hire high-functioning autistic workers. They can be paid as handicapped persons, so they're cheap as dirt. They're interchangeable. There are lots of them. They don't make trouble. They don't unionize. They can be kept happy, happily. They can be kept happy very easily by giving them a strict routine that they don't deviate from. And if they don't do their job very well, then we just say that they're disabled, we kick them out, and we get ourselves another one. They are the perfect Delta workers. In terms of the total population that the globalists want to have, they articulate that it is 90% gone, 10% retained, of whom the vast majority are these Delta worker, reduced capacity, impaired persons. So they're right on target for that, according to the professor at MIT, who says that in just 5 years, 50% of the children in the developed world and increasingly in the rest of the world will be autistic. And they'll be autistic from agrochemicals like glyphosate and vaccines together. That's where we're going unless we say not only no, but hell no. Now, one way to say no is with a boycott of these products. In Australia, where the Prime Minister, as we said, has decided that we're going to punish poor and needy families, there's a man named Adam Kraz who has decided that he's not going to put up with this any longer. He has a wonderful show called the Kraz File Podcast. He also, you should join him on Facebook, the Kraz File, C-R-A-Z-Z. Adam has decided to boycott what he calls the Terrible Telegraph. It's a Murdoch paper, not surprisingly. We all know the connection of Murdoch and Rupert Murdoch and the pharmaceutical industry. It's despicable and very, very strong. And there's a woman named Claire Harvey who is a pit bull for making sure that no one has vaccine choice, presumably except herself and the Prime Minister. Claire Harvey is writing a series of articles about how unvaccinated people are selfish and killing babies, like the baby who died of whooping cough, not remembering that an Australian immunologist just 3 days ago said that the use of the vaccine against pertussis is causing more pertussis deaths because the pertussis bacterium is mutating and the immune system is not able to handle it because it's been weakened by the vaccine. Now, that's very interesting, but I guess Claire Harvey knows a whole lot more than the immunologist. Mm. This no pay, no jab, no play campaign. You can't go to school. You can't be in public spaces unless you've been vaccinated. And no jab, no pay campaign is straight out of Murdoch land. So he is suggesting that people in Australia boycott the Murdoch papers, including the Daily Telegraph. It's a great
idea.
Was
not Rupert Murdoch's son on the head of GlaxoSmithKline, which produced a lot of the vaccine?
Absolutely. He sat on the board, and it was Rupert Murdoch whose paper in London, the Telegraph in London, hired Brian Deer to savage Dr. Andy Wakefield, who said that the MMR vaccine, the virus of the measles portion of the MMR vaccine, was found in the intestines of autistic children with severe gastrointestinal problems. And indeed it was in that study, although withdrawn by The Lancet under pressure, because who supports the medical journals, these peer-reviewed journals? Why, the pharmaceutical industry. So The Lancet retracted the paper, but the study that Dr. Andrew Wakefield performed has been replicated now 5 times independently elsewhere. It's true. The actual viruses and bacteria in the vaccines are themselves dangers, not only to the person who receives the vaccine, but to the person whom they shed the vaccine, the viruses and the bacteria on after they receive the vaccine. So it is the vaccinated who are a danger to the unvaccinated, not the other way around. So Adam Kraz, C-R-A-Z-Z, The Kraz Files on Facebook, is suggesting a boycott of the Telegraph, and I support him. I wish I read the Telegraph so I could stop reading it.
You know, it's kind of like junk information. It's garbage in, garbage out. And I've been telling people this for years, that you need to throw your frickin' television out. You need to stop reading the mainstream media, okay? If you're looking for a good meal, you don't go to a gas station. You cannot find any nutritious food in a gas station. If you can, I'll give you 50,000 Bitcoin. And what I was thinking was, again, this needs to be reiterated. They're making sure in Australia now, or at least this is the laws that's being debated as far as I know, that if you don't have a vaccination for your children and you're drawing some kind of government benefit, then they will basically cancel your government benefit, which will cost you on average $15,000 per year for each child that you do not vaccinate, on average. Okay, now an article comes out in New Zealand like a couple of days after this announcement. Leading doctor calls for no jab, no pay in New Zealand. Now, this leading doctor is, in fact, a GP, a general practitioner, Lance O'Sullivan from Northland. And he has just appeared in another article in the New Zealand Herald saying that he is number 2 on the list of New Zealand's most 100 trusted people. Now, I read through this article and I was like, okay, how can you tell if this article is a propaganda piece for Big Pharma? Number 1, the word children is mentioned 25 times. The word vulnerable is mentioned 6 times. Science? 0. Evidence? 0. Studies? 0. Plus, if you want more information, you're supposed to talk to either your pro-vaccination doctor or practice nurse, or failing that, call a pro-vaccination government department. Now, did you know that, I think it was under the Nuremberg laws, did you know that a doctor can lose their license if they try to force you to take a medication without your informed consent? Or pressure you into it? What this guy's doing violates the oaths he took to become a doctor. Now, I wonder how much money he gets paid in commission from Big Pharma to sell their poisons to unsuspecting victims who believe everything he says. Vaccine-pushing doctors have found a way to make being a douche and being irresponsible a part of their fiduciary responsibilities. Now, a pro-vaxxer was arguing with me about vaccinations and their validity. He said, do you even know what a peer-reviewed means? And I go, well, yes, I do know what a peer-reviewed means. In point of fact, what peer-reviewed means is the Rockefeller Foundation, who provide all the drugs made out of crude oil waste products, sent a man named Flexner around U.S. medical schools once upon a time late in the 1800s. Flexner ordered all medical schools that didn't meet his, quote, standards, i.e. anything that is not drug-based medicine, would be closed. Herbology, reflexology, naturopathy, homeopathy, chiropractic, basically closed the schools that were teaching any medical practice that were teaching anything other than a pill for every ill. Ever since then, the quote-unquote peer review is a way of keeping inconvenient research from being verified. For example, everyone thinks the level 6 biotoxin hydrofluorosilicic acid, aka fluoride, is safe and effective, right? Because there are 5,000 peer-reviewed articles on the effects of fluoride on teeth to prove it. But there are like zero peer-reviewed articles on the fluoride's effect on the brain, the liver, the bones, the immune system, reproductive organs, the environment, skin, eyes, digestion, or anything that is affected by the ingestion of fluoride. There have been many, many studies proving that it is dangerous, but of course, a lot of them are not quote-unquote peer-reviewed. Just imagine for one moment that you don't know everything. Imagine for a moment that everything you think you know is a lie. Imagine for a moment that all the crazy people are in fact the sane ones, and that you are the madman. Imagine for a moment that you're so crazy that you don't know how crazy you are. And then imagine for a moment that it all didn't happen by accident, but it was a result of a deliberate plan by groups of madmen far more insane than you could ever possibly imagine. That's what we're talking about here when it comes to vaccinations. And it was the former FBI director, J. Edgar Hoover, who once famously said, "The individual is handicapped by coming face to face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists." And this is why everybody who speaks out about vaccines has these trolls and foolish people who are repeating rabbited propaganda and marketing techniques that have been thought up in bloody think tanks and what have you by these incredibly massive, incredibly profitable organizations. That's why they keep arguing against you. That's why they keep refusing to look at the evidence. Because they cannot face it. It's so bad that they can't even believe it.
That's absolutely correct. Absolutely. And as somebody who has survived medical training, let me say that the brainwashing that goes into the formation of a young doctor, or I suspect a young lawyer, although I've never survived that training, you have, Ralph, that brainwashing is pervasive, successful, beautifully honed, and is based upon an emotional deprivation system that hands out abuse to you when you're at the bottom of the ladder, also involves sleep deprivation and protein deprivation, humiliation, special code words that only you know, and progressive initiation into the inner secrets. And then as you rise in the esteem of the seniors and the ranks of the cult, because this is cult indoctrination, you are permitted to abuse those below you, satisfying your emotional need for redress, emotional redress, which is what happens in cults. You become...
Indeed. It seems also, I agree that lawyers are treated the same way to some extent, but the military is a great example of exactly what you're talking about as well.
And there they say, we're going to break your personality down and rebuild it to our liking. And that's precisely what they do. They break down a personality and they rebuild it. They create a psychopathological state and they're proud of it. And then having done that, then they can control you forever. It's very powerful and it's very, very well done and very clever. Now, having said that, some people either break out later or it never takes. You know, it's like the vaccinologist will admit, well, you know, vaccines don't actually work for everybody, but everybody needs them anyhow. In the same way, the brainwashing doesn't actually work for everybody. There's always a small percentage of people who see through it, for whom it doesn't work, for whom the appeal of abusing other people isn't there, and who don't seek psychological redress for their ills. They either get out or they seek psychological redress for the ills of society that produce the system. And that's, I guess, what we are, the kind of people that we are, because we're just not part of that system, although we have all their tools at hand. We understand their lingo, we understand their systems, and we just buy it. That makes us very dangerous. We're like insiders who have...
Oh, Dr. Rumi, you're cutting out pretty badly there. Ralph, you getting that as well?
No, I lost Dr. Rima also, but I understand what she's talking about, and it's a very powerful message indeed. I've been working on some information on the Nuremberg Code, which we had alluded to earlier in the program, and there were a couple of other pieces of information I thought might be very, very useful to take a look at. For example, I came across on Facebook... excellent website, folks. At least one of them on Facebook, Vaccine Resistance Movement, the VRM. Excellent information. And they have people all over the world basically feeding them back. And so one of the major events that happened this week was that, again, we seem to have derailed a fast-track pro-vax law. As I said, 27 American states had bills introduced to restrict people's rights to avoid vaccination. And in the several of those states, Washington, Oregon, Maryland, I believe New Jersey, where I got a chance to talk to our state legislators for 90 seconds, we seem to have stopped the bill. In California, it doesn't look that good. It passed through one committee and is heading toward another committee. But this Senate Education Committee hearing on Wednesday, today, apparently produced some really good questions, and it looks as though it may no longer be, the bill may no longer be fast-tracked. It appears as though the provision in the bill that would have forced homeschool children to be vaccinated has been removed, which is a big plus. But I thought I'd read, there's a list of points that were made before this committee by the witnesses, by the people who came there to protest. And I thought that these points were worth reading off. There's a dozen of them or so. And they give us a summary of what it's taken in one state to slow down the onslaught. And here's the list. It's no public health crisis. There is no public health crisis. The high vaccination rates already exist. There's a very small percentage of people who claim religious or philosophical exemptions. The bill that they want to introduce, which would abolish all religious exemptions to vaccination, itself violates religious rights. It discriminates against low-income, single-parent families. And, of course, in Australia, they want to go one step further and literally coerce those families through money. It denies public education. It violates the state constitution in California. It creates a separate but unequal educational system in violation of the law. It selectively vaccinates. It violates informed consent. And that, of course, is really where I've been doing some research of late. What is it about the Nuremberg Code? What is it about? Why were the Nazi doctors hung after World War II? Was it just because they engaged in experiments on people without their consent, or was it more than that? Does informed consent only apply to experimental medicine, in which case, as you know, the authorities believe that vaccination is settled science, it's not an experiment anymore? Or is it in its very nature true that all medicine is experimental, and that as they say in the United States, the fourth stage of drug testing is when it's released to the public? And in fact, 50% of all the drugs approved in the United States anyway, by the FDA, are within 5 years of approval either withdrawn from the market or drastically changed in their indications because of that fourth stage of experiment, namely released to the public. So on that level, it is all experimental medicine. The right to informed consent is absolute. Taking away that right violates the Nuremberg Code and is literally a crime against humanity. And I think it's really important to stop treating these vaxxers as people who have decent motives in mind, but rather to realize that they are individuals who are motivated by a collectivist ideology that places the rights of the individual secondary to the authority, the power, the needs of the elite. And that, of course, is what we're facing here.
I'd like to take a little bit of exception to the with what you just said, Ralph. The people at the top, the decision makers way up there, are exactly as you described. They're not benign. They are very cognizant of what they're doing. There's no way that Bill Gates does not know that vaccines are a depopulation tool, as he said famously in his TED Talk. He knows that perfectly well. He, as I think most people know at this point, he is the son of a very, very highly placed depopulationist, and he learned the ideology well at his father's knee. But most people, most of the folks that we encounter on a regular basis are not evil people. They're parents, they're teachers, they're cops, they're doctors, they're nurses, who have simply bought into the propaganda, the brilliant propaganda.
Ralph, your microphone again, sorry.
That's been pounded into our society for decades and decades and decades. They've bought into the propaganda, and they can't think their way out of a paper journal. So they're not evil people. They are genuine people, and that's why it's so hard to comprehend how stupid they are on this particular issue, because they simply will not see the reality that there is science to support, which is that these things, by their very nature, are insane. If you inject toxins into people to make them healthy, you're a crazy person.
Well, I think it's like Cliff Heiss said, when somebody calls me crazy, I say thank you. And they say, why are you thanking me? And he goes, well, in a world like this, if you were to call me sane, I'd take that as an insult.
Indeed. Indeed. But I think it's important not to attribute motivation to the dupes. The dupes are a product of their dupery, if you will, but they are not necessarily evil. They're just well-beduped.
Well-beduped and well-to-do. That's the average American, the average New Zealander, the average UK. The average person in the Western world has a set mind, all right, and it's almost like a sausage machine. The meat goes in and a similar shape comes out. But what I'm talking about here is a way of shaping everybody's mind, putting their brains and their souls into a meat grinder to produce a particular kind of shape that very few people ever come out of.
I believe that's called the educational system, is it not?
Yeah, well, I think it's a multifaceted approach. It's what would you say? How many hours a day do you spend in television? Probably about 8 hours in school, 6 hours, and then you spend the rest sleeping or whatever. So I'd probably say it's just a combination of education and entertainment. Those two things have almost been entirely corrupted, and now produce something that they're not supposed to.
I haven't had a television in my home for for over 40 years. I haven't had a television in my home. I suppose I've missed one or two programs that I might otherwise like to see. But when I travel, and I travel quite often, one of the first things I do wherever I am is turn on the TV in the hotel room and watch the way an anthropologist from Mars would watch the culture. It is fascinating. And it is horrifying. And the words don't matter. You know, if I'm in Germany, I don't understand the German station. If I'm in India, I don't understand the Hindi or the Malayalam or whatever station. But the emission, the cultural meme, if you will, is very, very evident. And it's not something I want in my life. I don't know why people do. There are so many other things to do with your life.
Yes, you do, Dr. Raymer. You know that mind control is addictive.
Well, there is that, yes. That's true.
it'd be so funny if it wasn't true. I'm just forcing myself to laugh anyway. You know, I figured something out. I'm feeling really, really good lately. You know why? Because I've been forcing myself to laugh at things that make me piss myself with fear.
Well, that's a very ancient technique, as a matter of fact, and it turns out to have, I'm sure you'll be happy to know if you don't already know, quite a lot of neurological evidence supporting it, because you change the neurotransmitters by the expression of, let's say, laughter or assumed anger when you don't feel anger, or assumed rationality when you don't feel rational. You actually change the brain chemistry. So it's not, you know, in Anna and the King of Siam, Lerner and Lowe, she said, whenever I feel afraid, I hold myself erect and whistle a happy tune, and no one will suspect I'm afraid, including myself, of course. That was the point of it.
Now, you could just call us a conspiracy theorist, you know, and that just makes all that go away.
Well, that's right. When you call somebody a name, then the problem that they're presenting, the data that they're presenting, evaporates. It's well known. I suppose there might be peer-reviewed papers on it.
Peer-reviewed papers, they honestly need to be ripped up and used for rolling joints. I don't know what to say.
Well, I have to tell you a peer-reviewed paper story. Ralph and I just had this happen on Easter Sunday last week, if I remember correctly. I wrote part of a paper. Ralph wrote part of the same paper. And it's got 199 scientific references, very, very powerful ones, and it shows that CBD, not THC, is the part of the hemp plant and the part of our own biology in which the healing resides, and that THC is toxic. Now, it's a standard scientific paper written in a standard scientific paper format, which Ralph and I know how to write very well. And we made sure that all the footnotes matched the style requirements and blah, blah, blah. And then I sent it off to the Journal of the American Medical Association on Sunday at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon by email. Ralph, you want to talk about what happened? Ralph, maybe he's on mute. Ralph, are you there? Okay.
I'm off mute. And yes, let's repeat that again. Easter Sunday, and within 2 hours, no, even less, we got rejections, formal rejections, sort of, but rejections on an Easter Sunday, in the middle of the day. Very interesting indeed.
Yes, either the topic was unthinkable, or more likely, our names were unpublishable. We were on some sort of, I suspect, we're on sort of blacklist. So I then sent the paper off that afternoon to, a little later, to the New England Journal of Medicine, another supposedly high standard.
Ralph, your microphone again, man.
Thank you.
Scientific paper. And that took a little bit longer. That was in my email box the next morning, waiting for me, saying, we don't publish papers like yours. Go away, go away. It didn't say, please revise and resubmit, or please check your references, or didn't say any of that. It just said, we hate you, go away, in essence. Now, that's very, very interesting. So I didn't even have a chance in those two esteemed journals. I didn't even have a chance to have my peer review. The editor, and these were signed, by the way, by the editors. The editor said, I can't hear you, la, 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 go away, go away. That was astonishing. I have submitted many, many papers and had them published, by the way. I know the process. Ralph has done the same. This was a new level of astonishment for me. We're on a scientific blacklist. I'm so honored.
You know, there was, I think somebody put out a thing, if you're not on some kind of watch list in this day and age, then you should ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, you're not doing a very good job.
It's like, bro, people go to me, hey, Vinny, why are you putting your
story? It's a famous story from the mid-1800s when Henry David Thoreau was put in jail for refusing to pay the war tax for the American invasion of Mexico. And his friend Ralph Waldo Emerson, the philosopher, came to visit him in jail. And Ralph Waldo Emerson said to Henry David Thoreau, Henry, what are you doing in jail? And Henry David Thoreau looked at him and said, Ralph, what are you doing out of jail?
And you could be like, well, whatever I like, really. Oh, you know, just rub it in, bro. Oh, that was just so cruel. So cruel. Almost as cruel as vaccinating people against their will. Almost.
You know, I have to, again, take another moment to offer a slightly contrarian point of view. It's equally cruel to vaccinate people with their will. The only reason that they're being, you know, that they're willing themselves to be vaccinated is because they've been so thoroughly and carefully lied to. If there was some science, if there was some protection, if there was some biological advantage to it, well, yeah. But in fact, there is none. So people who are well duped get vaccinated at their will. People who are less well duped get vaccinated against their will. But it's, if I may use a phrase that you will probably like, it's more dupery. It's just dupery.
It's a double dose. It's super dupery. It's a double dose of super dupery.
Exactly.
Mighty Mouse is on the way. Here he comes to vaccinate. You will never, ladies and gentlemen, the only thing worse than Vinny Eastwood's jokes is the truth. Thank you.
Absolutely. It is super dupery. And the fact that it's done with people's acquiescence is, as I said, just an indication of how tragically dupey it is. Or one might say duped.
The duped. Somebody was asking me, like, I was asking, you know, in this environment, is fear, apathy, or anger more useful? You know, and I think anger is probably slightly more useful than fear and apathy. Love even more useful than anger. But somebody said, well, it depends whether or not you're the scumbagger or the scumbaggery. And I said, that's some incorrect word usage there. It's just a scumbag, not the scumbagger. And a scumbaggery is somebody who's a referee between a fight between two scumbags. The correct terminology is scumbaggered, which means you're feeling haggard from all the scumbaggery.
You know, I think you're right. And I think that there are those people who seek to be part of this, and they are the scumbaggers. They beg for scumbaggery.
They're just the scumbags.
And they are the scumbaggers, all right, because they're taking bags of money home with them.
Well, precisely. They transport them in a scumbag. Or perhaps in a dead soldier's corpse, you know? Anybody keen on some heroin smuggling? Thank you very much, CIA, for your wonderful delivery mechanisms.
Right.
I guess that one escaped me. I'm not aware of that.
You ever heard of Air America, where the CIA was hollowing out the bodies of dead Vietnamese veterans and shipping them home full of heroin?
I missed the hollowing out bodies.
And they put the heroin in the hollowed out body
cavities.
Yeah, because right. they're not allowed to open the coffins when you get home and check them or in route or anything like that. So it was the perfect airtight smuggling operation from the Golden Triangle in Southeast Asia, where the bulk of the world's heroin at the time was grown.
Yes, that was before we took over Afghanistan's heroin trade.
But of course, we went there. But of course, the United States went there to war with the North Vietnamese for freedom and to stop terrible communism. You know,
they did. They did, and it was so successful. And you know, the most successful thing about it was that the American populace, the world populace, did not notice that it was precipitated on a false flag of a false flag that didn't even happen, which is better than a false flag that actually does happen, of course. So, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin incident never happened, whereas we kind of lost the touch for the Iraqi war. We actually did make the false flag happen. So we've gotten a little more primitive, if you will.
And also, just a little interesting tidbit, Ralph, the microphone again, mate. I'm sorry to have to keep reminding you.
Okay.
The Gulf of Tonkin was actually thought up by an intelligence officer who was actually Jim Morrison, the lead singer of The Doors, father.
Yes.
What a coinkydink. If that don't put the dink in coinkydink, what are you saying? So some super rock star who had a massive following father was in military psyops? Well, yes. Yes, I am. Well, that doesn't seem suspicious at all. How about all these other really famous bands? Well, actually, a lot of them come from intelligence agency families as well. Oh, okay. Well, nothing to see here.
Move right along. Everything you've been told is the truth. You're not living in a fantasy world made up by lying scumbags, just to reassure you.
Right. Isn't Sting also from a family related that way?
Yeah, I mean, that's why they call them sting operations.
Right. And, of course, there are those rumors that the current White House occupant in the United States, his mother and his grandmother were both CIA assets, as they say. But who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? All right. Well, anyway, the CIA has massive, massive connections. And I think one of their former directors even said, we'll know our disinformation campaign is successful when everything the American public believes is the opposite of the truth, or words to that effect. That's a public statement.
But of course, you understand that going along with that is the political law, if you will, that the more stratified and hierarchical the system, the less real information gets up to the top. And the people at the top are actually probably as misinformed as we are. And they're trying to hold on to their ill-gotten gains in a culture and a society which seems to them, from their viewpoint, to be chaotic and very risky for what they want. And that's why they're quite willing to see mega death as a solution to a problem, the problems that they see, which are problems that that could result in them losing their control. I mean, their situation is very precarious. The bubble in the finance industry is so huge that the next burst, which will probably happen, by the way, I predict on or about September 13, 2015, that collapse will leave a lot of people in a very serious state. You were talking about earlier, we were talking about what would the world look like if the mad vaxxers got their way. Well, it would look very much like the collapse of the economy and the collapse of normal civilization that we can envision as part of a war or part of a major economic collapse, only mediated or triggered by a vaccine-induced disease. And all along the way, the public health officials will be saying, we don't know what's going on. We're trying to deal with this. Help, we need more power. The only way we can deal with this is when we have more authority. Just like the ministers of finance during the hyperinflations in Germany and in Zimbabwe both said the same thing. We can't possibly be causing this by printing up the money. We're not printing up money as fast as the inflation rate. We're doing our best to keep up with the inflation rate. We're doing our best to keep up with the inflation in the number of deadly diseases like toenail fungus or what else we're gonna.
But there's a piece here that we need to bring to the fore that is very rarely talked about. In June of 2007, the member countries of the World Health Organization, which is pretty much all of the countries in the world, signed an agreement which, in the case of a level 6 pandemic...
Ralph, your microphone again, please.
...which is declared absolutely unilaterally without any input from anybody else, when the World Health Organization decides to declare a level 6 pandemic, then what happens is that world governance passes by the accord of all these countries into the World Health Organization, which becomes the New World Order. Now, in 2009, a level 6 pandemic with absolutely no scientific or epidemiological justification was declared. The swine flu was declared to be a level 6 pandemic virus, and the World Health Organization was in a position to take over entire governance of the planet. That was opposed very vigorously by people like us and others through the lack of vaccination, because we said this is a really bad thing to do for a variety of reasons, and people stayed away from the vaccine in droves. Therefore, the disease did not develop. It was not spread because very few people took the vaccine. But the next step would have been, at least legally in terms of what they've set up for themselves, for the World Health Organization to take over the governance of the entire planet. And vaccines are an immensely important tool in bringing about this cataclysm-based epidemic situation that will allow for the dissolvement, the dissolution of all world governments. In the African Ebola countries, the World Health Organization, this was not in the media, but we have very, very good contacts in Africa, and we were on the phone with them quite a lot. The World Health Organization seized control of the government. There was no government besides WHO, which is kind of ironic when you consider that WHO actually spread the disease into these countries with the help and active participation of Doctors Without Borders and the CIA. That's perhaps another show. But the point is that the New World Order and the New World Vaccination Program are intimately, intimately connected.
Well, it seems that there is nothing that has not been touched by the scumbaggery. Right, and that's why I call it fractal scumbaggery. A fractal is a hologram that you can zoom into, and no matter how far you zoom in, the hologram keeps repeating the same pattern, so you keep seeing the same thing as you continue to move in. And such is the same as scumbaggery. For any form of scumbaggery that you look into, you will see more and more of it coming into view in an infinite loop that goes off in all sorts of directions, that also in their own infinite loops as well. Fractal scumbaggery, remember it.
You know, Vinny, that's a brilliant concept. Do you mind if I borrow it?
Go for your life.
With attribution? It's brilliant. I really like that a lot. And I will, of course, attribute it to you. But I will talk about fractal scumbaggery. It's a lot like, or it is connected with, the concept that General Byrd articulated of malignant oscillations, in which something goes wrong or gets disturbed, and then it corrects, and then it overcorrects and creates more of a problem, and then that overcorrection is overcorrected for and creates more of a problem, and the disturbance, the oscillation of disturbance up and down and up and down gets bigger and bigger and bigger until essentially the entire system is torn apart. And fractal scumbaggery is surely one of the mechanisms of malignant oscillation.
Can you stop it oscillating? You know, I think everybody is getting into this. That's ironic, an ironic generalization. I was just about to generalize about how bad generalizations can be, but I was just thinking, like, if you have a system and it's totally comprehensible, but you can only really, you're only one person, you can only do so much in a day, it helps to have a focus. It helps to have a focus.
There's a fallacy there. And that is, if you're sitting in your bedroom talking to yourself, or sitting in your dining room talking to your wife or your husband, or sitting in the library talking to your bunch of cronies, you're only 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 people. But through the magic of modern communications, we're millions and hundreds of millions and ultimately billions of people. Without the internet, we would have no hope at all. Without this kind of broadcast communication, we would have quite literally no hope at all, which is why I was so surprised that net neutrality was allowed to survive in the United States. Quite extraordinary. We have kill switch legislation to turn it off and so on and so on. We, the Natural Solutions Foundation, have been attacked by an absolutely illegal government program called Operation Choke Point. Our funds were seized, our bank accounts were secretly closed, yada, 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 yada. This is permitted, but we have the internet. And as long as we have the internet, we are not just one person, Vinny. We are quite literally the entire planet full of people who understand life, who understand love, and who will do what is necessary if they understand that they have power and they have the tools to do what is necessary. If they buy into the dirty little secret, if they buy into the opposite of the dirty little secret and they believe that they're powerless, then they are, and we're lost. If they understand the dirty little secret of the globalists, which is that they're very weak, there are very few of them, they're very frightened, and when we push back in sufficient numbers, they invariably step back, invariably. And we've proven this several times. So you said earlier, humanity will never be defeated. Yeah, well, one tool to never be defeated is the internet, and we have to use it, and we have to mobilize this resistance, because that's what it is, through the internet. Without that, I don't believe that we will survive and that we can win.
I've always loved the idea of entertaining the thought that we might lose and get to the point where you almost convince yourself that you are going to lose. And in so doing, the challenge becomes, how can you fight a fight that you know you will lose anyway, and not ever give up? And then you will find the answer, because you do not have a choice, and you cannot live with yourself if you do give up. And in fact, you might think that there's a guaranteed death ahead. Well, I'll tell you what, you're going to die anyway. You might as well do it trying to preserve human life, free human life, because there's not much point being alive if you're not free. We'll see you again sometime, folks.